So first, I have a question from David Mitchell of the Louisiana Advocate. David, I'm going to unmute you and then unmute yourself on your own phone and ask your question.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I actually put in three, so do you want me to
Yeah,
just tap?
we'll do one at a time. So what's your first question? Go ahead.
All right, so this is kind of in the weeds, but I'm just curious. This is for Kim Terrell. As she may know, the Geismar monitor has been is in the process of being moved and shifted over to Carville. I'm wondering if you have any sense of what the Ozone numbers would be if the Geismar monitor was still there, because that is almost directly across the river from where MODEST is.
So, yeah, thanks, David. I appreciate the question. And you know, I like to get in the weeds. My understanding is that that Geismar monitor only measured PM 2.5.
Ah, okay.
I don't think DEQ had an ozone monitor at that site. And Hyundai did actually use PM 2.5 values from the Geismar monitor to model its PM 2.5. And it had issues, right? Like, this is a little bit similar to the Formosa situation where they said, okay, we predict an exceedance of the 24-hour PM 2.5 standard, but it's not our fault, significant impact levels, that kind of thing. And they did not model the annual average PM 2.5 level, because there it seems impossible that they wouldn't have exceeded that standard, because the values at Geismar are already so close to that 9.0 threshold. But certainly, like, if you just look at the landscape, you can see that the Carville site is less industrialized, kind of further from that cluster of Geismar activity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's well. So the other one is the NOx issue. Am I remembering correctly that some other companies seeking permits have modeled NOx and found it elevated in an area of, like, they were at in its worst case and all that? And has anyone, like, put all this together, like all the things that are being proposed in that area in added it all up, because that's the reality of it. Are you aware of any work that's figured that out and modeled it?
Yeah, so good questions. For NOx modeling, the first question, Formosa was another example of that. Like, they had kind of the exact same issue. And then I believe Nucor in St. James also had that same issue. I know I looked into this a while back, and I can dig up those numbers, if that would be useful. Because those facilities, even though they're in the next parish over, they're not that far away.
Right.
And then, in terms of the cumulative burden, Tyler and Sonny, feel free to jump in, but I don't know of any place where that information has been compiled together. I mean, even when we had better access to environmental data under the last EPA administration, that was always the challenge, right? Like, we were always looking at the cumulative burden of what's already there. Or if we're looking at an application, they've added their facility. But in terms of all these proposed mega projects that are in development at the same time, I don't think anybody has done that analysis.
So just to put a final point on it, so you're not aware of any company modeling submitted to DEQ that has taken into account, like, ACE and all the other ones on CF that are coming in that MODEST area. None of them have added the others in.
To my knowledge, that's correct. So I know for sure that Hyundai did not account for ACE or CF. And then those two facilities wouldn't have accounted for a Hyundai because their draft permit didn't exist when they were doing their modeling.
All right, the last question. I just haven't looked deeply into the Hyundai air permit. How did they address the census tracts in MODEST that have the elevated cancer risk already noted by NATA, the National Air Toxics Assessment? How did they address that? What did the number ended up being after they added in all their toxics?
I haven't looked at that. I can go back and look, and follow up with you.
All right, sorry.
And I
I know it's
can
in the
I
weeds. I'm sorry.
no, I love being in the weeds with you. There's also like cancer rate data from the Louisiana Tumor Registry for that area that's pretty compelling. So right across the river from this site, like in the map I showed where it has like the 0.1% most toxic air, there's a census tract that captures most of that area. And it has a cancer rate that's higher than the Louisiana average, which of course itself is higher than the national average.
That's incidence rate.
I'm sorry?
That's incidence rate. Incidences, actual
Yes,
cases.
that's incidence, and it's tract 303 in Ascension Parish based on the Tumor Registry's most recent report.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And if you need to exchange emails and set up an interview later on to go into more detail, feel free. Okay, our next question is from Maria Gallucci of Canary Media. Maria, I'm going to unmute you. Unmute yourself on your own computer and ask your question.
Great. Yeah, thank you for holding this call and thanks to all the speakers. I was just hoping to hear a little bit more about sort of the sources of the pollution from the steel mill. I understand obviously the plant will be burning a lot of natural gas, and I just wondered if anyone could kind of talk a bit more about where that pollution is coming from.
Tyler Wegline, our engineering analyst at the Environmental Integrity Project, do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. So the question is a little bit nuanced just because of the type of pollutant varies by source, but the direct reduction plant where the reduction furnace is located is a major source. And the fact that natural gas is used to convert iron ore into metallic iron is an issue, especially from a greenhouse gas perspective. Another major source is the steel melting plant, which is the biggest source of heavy metals like lead and mercury. That is where the metallic iron is actually turned into steel. And so for metal emissions, that is a significant source. So it's really the facility as a whole with different components, with a direct reduction plant and the steel melting plant. Those are the two larger sources of pollutants. Hopefully that answers your question. If you would like more detail, I can give you my email and we can dive into this some more.
No, that was great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much. Okay, our next question is from Renee Ronquillo. Renee, I'm going to unmute you. Unmute yourself on your own computer. Let us know where you're from and what your question is.
Hi, yeah, so I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I had a question for Anne regarding I found the jobs statistics interesting and was curious if those inflated numbers, they put those numbers out there because those might be the construction jobs, knowing good and well that those jobs are not long term. And so they put those high numbers out and then they go down to in the 200s. Is that a possibility, or is that not, or is there just inflated, wrong numbers to begin with?
Thanks, Renee. Good question. If you notice in the quotes that I had, it says direct jobs. So you're right that in general they do give numbers that include all sorts of other jobs, but in this case, those are the numbers that they are saying will be directly employed by the companies.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, thank you. All right, we have a reporter question now from Delaney Nolan at The Lens in New Orleans. Delaney, I'm going to unmute you. Unmute yourself on your own computer as well and ask your question.
Hi, thank you. And this is Delaney Nolan at The Lens. I appreciate you all making time for it. I am going to try and drag us back into the weeds. I'm sorry. Kim Tao, when you and David Mitchell were talking about cumulative impacts, the court ruling 2 years ago, did that not prevent I think you guys were talking about the LDEQ, but did that ruling not prevent the federal government from even considering cumulative impacts and its permitting and regulations? And do you think things would be different without that ruling, or would we maybe have that data? if that ruling had not happened?
Well, I think I appreciate the question, Delaney. Thank you. And I'm going to defer to Sonny because he's the attorney. And I'm not. But let me just make sure I understand. So the ruling that you're talking about, are you talking about the Formosa case?
No, this was Louisiana versus EPA back in August 2024.
Yes, so the Title VI investigation. So Sunny, I think that's more of a question for you of whether DEQ has to consider cumulative impacts. Certainly, like I will say that the way that permits are structured is very much one pollutant at a time, assuming that people are exposed to kind of one pollutant in isolation. But then the question of whether, like the state constitution or environmental justice orders, like whether there's other pieces that require DEQ to take a more holistic look, I think is more of a legal question. So I defer to you, Sonny.
Sonny Lee?
Yeah, thanks for your question, Delaney. To be quite frank, I'm not as familiar with Louisiana versus EPA, so I don't want to speak too authoritatively here, but my understanding from what I recall from that case is there's different contexts where you're considering cumulative impact, and I believe that was a Title VI case, although I would have to go back and kind of refresh my memory. This context is in the permitting context is very specific, where you're really looking at background concentrations from other plants. It's for compliance with the NAAQS. Depending on like what the context you might be doing a cumulative impact analysis might make a difference in how a court would rule on that. My understanding is that that case doesn't affect cumulative impact for analysis for NAAQS. But again, like I said, I would have to go back and refresh myself on that case.
Okay, cool. Thank you all. And actually, I also had to follow up on the other last
Sure, go
question.
ahead.
You said direct jobs. Were those also permanent jobs, or did they never specify whether or not they were direct and permanent jobs when Nucor was talking about creating 1,200 jobs? Sorry, this is a
Yeah.
question for Anne.
Actually, Kim and I are going back and forth about that right now. She thinks that maybe those might include short-term jobs. So I don't know. When I was looking this over, I mean, I guess I'm inferring that they're talking about employed by Nucor over the long term, but sure, it could include short-term jobs too. We can look into it more and get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And
Go
just
ahead.
to super quickly clarify, when they say indirect jobs, they typically mean things like doctors and school teachers and, all the people that you interact with as a person in your life. And those numbers are even more kind of subjective and inflated. It's a good question to follow up on whether those direct numbers are specific to permanent jobs.
Or at least they're supposed to be, yeah. Or would direct jobs also include contractors, but that are like working directly on the project?
I think that's something we can follow up with, but generally, like we don't get much clarity with these numbers, and then of course there's never any follow up.
Right.
But Anne, maybe you and I can dig into this and follow up with Delaney, and I think it was Renee,
Yeah.
if
And
y'all want to drop your emails.
Jeff Landry at that press conference in March of 2025 has a huge total jobs number. Like it's just a crazy number he just said. But then the number that they're giving regarding the direct jobs is 1,400. But we'll look into the specifics because they're good questions.
Sonny Lee, do you have a statement? I see your hand is up.
I just wanted to follow up quickly, Delaney. I did look it up, and yes, I'm thinking of the right case. Louisiana versus EPA was a Title VI Civil Rights Act case, and I'm not quite as familiar with that just because the Civil Rights Act is a little outside my wheelhouse. But the cumulative impact analysis is a requirement of, the permitting process of the Clean Air Act. So I to give a quick answer to your question, no, I don't believe Louisiana versus EPA affects this matter.
I have a question here from Hallie Parker. Hallie Parker's hand is up. Hallie, I'm going to unmute you and remind us where you're from and what your question is.
Yeah, hi. I am with Verite News in New Orleans, and I had asked Anne this, but I also wanted to ask this to the larger group. I was wondering if you guys had noticed anything odd about the environmental justice analysis when it came to the steel mill, and whether, it like if you could just characterize whether it was robust enough, what it included, that sort of thing, if you guys are aware, and if it was like less robust than maybe we've seen in the past.
Dr. Terrell, do you have any thoughts on that? Or Sunny Lee?
Well, I know that it disappeared and then it reappeared from the permitting materials. And I think, Tyler, I don't know if you had a chance to dig in more than I have. I'm happy to follow up with you, Haley, because I'm sure I will have plenty to say. But Sunny or Tyler?
I haven't had a chance to look at that part of the permit package.
Well, why don't you all exchange an email and set up a phone call about that, and you all can do a follow-up interview. Is that okay, Dr. Turrell? Maybe you guys can exchange emails. If you need to get in touch, you can email me at tpelton@environmentalintegrity.org. I can then set up a phone interview. Okay, great. Well, now we're up against the hour, so we're going to wrap it up. If you have any other questions or follow-ups, call me at 443-510-2574, Tom Pelton, or email me at tpelton@environmentalintegrity.org. We have a copy on our website of the fact sheet about the pollution from the plant. Take a look at that and remember to go to the public hearing on Tuesday, September 1st, at the Memorial Center Gymnasium at 1100 Clay Street in Donaldsonville. Thank you to everyone for coming to today's event, and have a great afternoon.